Not far from the Fergus farm, Andy and the sheriff encountered Thaddeus Honeycutt. Andy couldn't be sure if the big man came by his ruddy complexion from heredity, liquor, or his monumental rage at the theft of his black stud mare. The three men tracked Cordell after stopping to add a former employee of Honeycutt's, Choctaw John, to the posse. Honeycutt and Choctaw John bore no love for each other, but Honeycutt wanted the stallion back. John was the only one around able to track. Honeycutt promised not to abuse Choctaw John, but that promise soon evaporated. John was slow and careful in picking the stallion's tracks from those of the mares that had followed him out through the opening a fugitive left in the fence. And he lost the tracks a couple of times where the stallion rode over rocky ground.
If you cause me to lose that black stud, I'll whip you all the way back up to Injun territory where you belong.
John had heard this kind of talk from his youth. Growing up the son of a Scottish man and a Choctaw woman, he spent a lot of his youth whipping up on other kids in defense of his family.
You'd better be ready to eat that whip, handle it all. Sheriff, I wish you'd send Thaddeus home before the Indian side of me decides to scalp what little hair he's got left under his hat.
You can't send me home. It's a free country, and I got a right to look for my horse.
You'll be looking for him all by yourself if you don't tighten the rein on that mouth of yours.
Andy listened without comment. His interest was not in the stallion, but in the man who might be riding him. Local quarrels were none of his business. Honeycutt and the sheriff dropped back 20 or 30 yards, giving John plenty of room. Andy was curious about the tracker and remained beside him, trying to study his method. John had picked up the tracks again.
They're pretty old. They figure a couple of days. There ain't much left of them.
He looked back at Honeycutt.
I don't care if the old Dickens never finds his stud horse, as long as he pays me. And the longer we keep tracking, the more he's got to pay me.
Now and again, the tracks were plain enough that Andy could have followed them himself. Other times, he wondered at John's ability to see that which wasn't there. For a while, he suspected that John was stringing Honeycutt along for the money. Then the tracks would show up again. John's face showed little that seemed distinctly Indian beyond being a shade darker than average.
You don't look like most Indians I've known.
I'm just half, from my mama.
That's what I heard. Some people say I'm half Indian, too. When I was a boy, the Comanches captured me. I lived with them for several years.
They're wild men. We ain't nothing like them.
You don't talk like an Indian, either.
Us Choctaws have been civilized since my great-granddaddy's time. I've heard Comanches talk. They're savages. I never could make any sense of what they were saying.
Yeah, I used to speak Comanche. I'm afraid I've forgotten some of it.
Just as well. They ain't likely to rise again.
Andy was momentarily miffed at John's prejudice against those Andy considered his adopted people. Then he remembered that the Comanches looked down on everyone else, too. He'd heard Comanche warriors boast about killing Choctaws. They regarded them as being almost white. Prejudice wasn't the sole property of any one race.
I take it you've worked for Honeycutt before?
Several times. We get mad at one another, and he fires me or I quit. Then he needs me again.
And you keep going back to him?
Money ain't overly plentiful around here.
He's not paying you much.
But when I'm at his place, I carry enough home out of his kitchen to make up the difference. I can still eat during the times I ain't got a job.
If I had to be around him much, I'd sooner or later want to kill him.
I get even in my own way. Like, sometimes I pee in his coffee pot. The old hay shaker never knows.
Where's the revenge in it if he doesn't know?
The point is, I know.
You remind me of a friend named Len Tanner.
They camped at an abandoned home site where a dug well provided passable water. John gathered wood for a fire but didn't offer to contribute to the cooking. Neither did Honeycutt. So Andy and the sheriff took care of supper. The lawman opened a couple of airtights of tomatoes. Andy managed to burn Honeycutt's bacon, frying it down to a shrunken and blackened sliver. He boiled a pot of coffee and kept an eye on John in case he might seek a little revenge on his employer. The next morning, John said the trail was becoming fresher. Andy had to take his word for it. John pointed to a small area where the ground was disturbed.
Looks to me like that black stud tried to pitch him off.
Maybe he got away.
No. The rider managed to stay on him. Probably knew he'd be in bad trouble if he lost him. The tracks straighten out afterwards and head west like before. And a little to the north.
They came in the afternoon to a tree-lined creek where an old buggy stood on the bank.
I smell wood smoke. Somebody's camped down yonder. Well, I'll be damned. Yonder's that sorry black of yours.
He pointed toward the stallion. It raised its head from the shin-high grass and nickered at the oncoming horses.
I guess you just owe me for 2 days, Thaddeus.
How do you figure 2 days? It's no more than a day and a half.
Andy drew his rifle.
Yeah, doesn't seem likely that Cordell would be laying around in camp, but we'd better go slow. We don't know who's down there.
He remained in the saddle, keeping a tight grip on the weapon. A fishing pole stood wedged between two stones. He saw someone lying on the creek bank, evidently napping. And he rode within touching distance before he spoke.
Raise up easy. Don't make a move toward a gun.
An elderly man blinked the sleep from his eyes and stared up at Andy, or more precisely, at his rifle.
Ain't no use pointing that thing at me. I ain't got a gun, and there ain't much here that's worth stealing.
The sheriff's tension eased.
Don't worry, Andy. This is old man Dobson. I've known him forever.
The fisherman managed a weak smile, but didn't look away from Andy's rifle.
Son, better known. Howdy, Sheriff.
Honeycutt swung his bulk down from the saddle and approached Dobson with red-faced belligerence.
What the hell are you doing with my stallion?
Dobson got to his feet. The move appeared to stir up arthritis.
I ain't done nothing with him. He just showed up here. I wish you'd take him home. Every time he goes down to the creek for a drink, he paws the water and scares away the fish.
Honeycutt shook his finger in Dobson's face.
If you was thinking about breeding him to one of your mares...
I don't own but two mares, and I doubt they'd associate with that stud horse of yours. They're too prideful for that.
Andy pushed in front of Honeycutt, stopping his attempted argument.
What are you doing out here all by yourself, Mr. Dobson? I see a buggy, but I don't see a buggy horse.
Well, since my wife passed on to a better life, I like to get away from my son's family once in a while and camp here on the creek where it's quiet. Sometimes a man is his own best company. My son will fetch me a buggy horse when I get ready to go home.
Andy thought the story plausible as far as it went. But he suspected there was more to it.
That stud didn't just stray in here, it was ridden. We've been following its tracks.
Not we, me. You just as well tell him, son. This young man is a ranger.
Andy could see that his three companions knew Dobson. Two had respect for him. Honeycutt didn't, but that was a point in Dobson's favor.
Tell us about the man who rode in here on a stud.
Dobson rubbed his gray-whiskered chin and looked from one visitor to the other.
Now, I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
He's already in trouble.
Seemed like a nice feller. An outlaw, I suppose, but he was square with me. Bought my buggy mare and paid me double what she was worth.
If the fugitive was indeed Cordell, that payment was made with stolen money. Andy knew that he should by law confiscate it, but he had no intention of taking it away from this old man who didn't appear to be overly endowed with the world's goods.
What did this man look like?
Well, he was a big one. Not fat, mind you, just had shoulders on him like that black stud horse. Hands that looked like they could choke a mule. Black eyes, but friendly. The kind you feel like trusting. I'd have been willing to lend him that mare if he hadn't offered to buy her from me.
Yeah, you'd have never got her back.
Yeah. I've lost things a lot more valuable than that mare. Anyway, you got your stud back.
John looked straight at Honeycutt.
Thanks to me. You owe me for 2 days.
All right, 2 days. But that's where it stops.
Dobson looked on quizzically, not understanding the exchange.
Here's where I have to leave you, Andy. The county line is just ahead, and my authority stops there. I hope Thaddeus get his horse home.
Andy hated to bid the lawman goodbye.
Maybe I'll see you again, next time some lawbreaker passes through your county.
You're welcome to all you can catch. We've already got enough that we don't need any more.
Mr. Dobson, I don't suppose you'd want to tell us which way he went from here.
Dobson glanced at Choctaw John.
And I gave him a halfway promise. Anyway, with John to do the tracking, you don't need me to tell you. He can follow Crow's shadow for 10 miles.
Maybe 5.
Honeycutt suddenly looked alarmed.
I ain't paying that engine pass today. If he goes with you, it's up to the state or the county to foot the bill. Hey, come to think of it, not the county either. Your fugitive did his dirty work someplace else. I don't see why us Land Passes County taxpayers ought to ante up for it.
Andy turned to John.
How about it? Are you going on with me?
Driving season is over, so I got nothing better to do. The state's money is as good as his.
He nodded at Honeycutt.
Better. Because I won't have to listen to the state bellyaching all the time.
If you catch up to him, I hope you don't shoot him. I feel like he ain't a bad man at heart.
We don't shoot people for the fun of it, only if they force it on us.
It continued to puzzle him that almost everyone whose trail Cordell crossed bore kindly feelings toward him. Damn it all, the man was a bank robber. And even if he might not actually have fired the shot that killed Tom Blessing, he was partially responsible. It happened while he was breaking out of jail. And there was that kid, Buster. Cordell was at fault in his death as well. It gave Andy a double load of guilt, part for being late in coming to Tom's aid, and part for knowing that it was his bullet that ultimately killed the youngster.
Let's go, John. We've got an outlaw to catch.
Cordell was pleased with the bay mare. True, she was long past being a colt, but she still had enough go about her to carry him miles into the night without acting up. He made a dry and tireless camp. He would have liked some coffee, but that could wait. He'd stop somewhere after daylight and boil a pot without much risk that his campfire would attract attention. He had no specific reason to believe anyone was actually on his trail, but he trusted his hunches. They told him it was likely someone was. They just didn't tell him how far behind the pursuit might be.
I'm not gonna make it easy for him.
The mare responded with ease. He guided her onto hard, rocky ground, where the terrain offered any. Unlike the stallion, she never stumbled. His snaky trail would be difficult for even an expert tracker, and impossible for anyone less apt. He began to notice a considerable scattering of buffalo bones bleaching on the prairie. He realized this was all that remained of the vast, shaggy herds that once roamed the country. No one could have believed beforehand how quickly the herds would be destroyed once a market developed for the hides.
All wiped out, horse. All wiped out. That time has come and gone.
He tried not to dwell on it, but he couldn't help thinking that his own time would probably soon be gone, too. With John laws of all kinds covering Texas like horseflies, little room was left for free spirits like himself. Before long, bankers would be able to rob the public without having to worry about somebody robbing them. He'd have no choice but to change his occupation. Maybe he could make a living gathering up buffalo bones. In a couple of days, he came to the crumbled ruins of what he took to be a frontier military fort. Partial stone walls gave him some idea of the post's original configuration. He recognized one small structure as having been a powder magazine, constructed at a distance from the other buildings as a precaution in the event of an accidental explosion. Remnants of charred wood told him the fort burned in the distant past. From the stories he recalled, he realized this was probably what remained of Fort Phantom Hill, built as an outpost against Comanche and Kiowa, then abandoned. It would have been logical to assume that Indians burned it, but Cordell heard the departing soldiers hated the place so much that they had set it on fire, to make certain they never had to return. He had seen maps of this area. He tried to visualize them from memory and determine where he was in relation to the farm from which Buster came. Unfortunately, he was stumped. The sun was going down and he was hungry, so he decided to camp here. He could build a small campfire in one of the ruined buildings. The partially crumbled walls should protect the modest flames from view. He dismounted and loosed an unwieldy bundle from behind the cantle, along with his rolled blanket. In the bundle were coffee beans from Irmadale's kitchen and part of a ham from Jedediah's smokehouse.
Glad I thought to grab this stuff.
All that Galveston money in his saddlebags would do him no good if he starved. He had found a stream below the hill and assumed it to be the Clear Fork of the Brazos. He could follow it and find Fort Griffin, but it was as crooked as a snake's track. It stood to reason that he had bypassed Griffin and now was to the west or southwest of it. After the mare had drunk her fill, he staked her where he found the grass tall and moderately green for this part of the country. Here, rainfall was chancy, and grass had to be hardy to survive long periods of drought. But the struggle seemed to give the vegetation more strength than was common farther east. Animals thrived on it. The ham, though good, was getting to be monotonous. Sitting beside the tiny campfire, he sipped from what was left of his coffee. He reflected darkly that he seemed to have spent most of his adult life like this, alone, hungry, sleeping with a single blanket on the hard ground. Usually, like tonight, he wondered who might be coming up behind him and how close they might be to catching up. He thought about son Dobson and how much he would give to trade places with the old farmer fisherman, worried about nothing more than his noisy grandchildren. If they were Cordells, they could make all the noise they wanted. That would be far preferable to the eerie silence of this old fort, where stone chimneys stood like tombstones over broken-down walls. The place was about as welcoming as a cemetery. He dozed off, only to be awakened suddenly by the sound of horses moving through the grass.
What?
Cordell's heart hammered as he drew his pistol and sprinted out through an opening. He flattened himself against the highest part of the wall opposite the source of the sound.
Hello, the camp! Told you I smelled smoke. There's a campfire in that old building. What's left of one, anyway.
Maybe they got some coffee.
Cordell held his breath. He heard the creak of leather as the riders dismounted on the far side of the ruined structure.
Yeah, don't seem to be anybody here. Must have fixed supper and left.
Nah, there's a blanket yonder in a saddle. And I seen a horse staked outside. Somebody's still around.
Cordell stepped back through the opening, pistol in his hand.
Something I can do for you fellows?
The pistol caught their immediate attention. Both men raised their hands to shoulder height.
You don't need to point that thing at us, mister. We don't mean you no harm.
You come looking for me?
We don't even know who you are. We was just looking for some coffee and maybe something to eat.
Cordell placed several small pieces of dry wood on the fire to make it flare up. In its dancing light, he saw that both men were young, probably 20 years old or less. They looked like cowboys, possibly out of a job and riding the chuck line, depending upon others' hospitality. He lowered the pistol, but didn't immediately return it to its holster. Young or not, they could hurt a man.
Then I'm sorry if I gave you all a fright, but you never know who might come riding in out of the night. Fort Griffin and Clear Fork Country has raised some hard characters.
Well, we're a ways past Griffin.
That told Cordell he had indeed ridden too far. It was by no means the first wrong guess he'd made. In case someone should ask these two later, he decided to throw them off the track.
I know. Already been there. I'm heading west out to El Paso.
They got hard characters there, too.
Though not convinced, Cordell decided to give the pair the benefit of the doubt. He holstered the pistol, but didn't let his hand drift far from it.
The pot's empty, but you're welcome to boil some fresh coffee if you're mind to. I got smoked ham, too. You feel free to eat it all up. I'm tired of it.
He watched as they wolfed down what was left of his ham and drank coffee steaming hot. One had soft, patchy whiskers. He looked as if his next shave would be his first. The other's whiskers were just beginning to darken.
You all walk around here?
They looked at one another before the older of the two answered.
We're drovers. It came up from south of San Antonio with the herd, but got fired at Griffin. It wasn't our fault. We wasn't the ones started the fight.
Anybody killed?
Well, not quite, but pert near. We decided not to stay around. You know, folks in Fort Griffin have been known to hang people.
Cordell noticed that the younger-looking one, who had spoken little, seemed to be studying Cordell's saddle with much interest. Perhaps he sensed that the bulging saddlebags held something more than grub.
Much obliged for the supper. If you don't mind, we'll stake our horses and camp the night here.
Oh, well, it's a free country.
He watched them as they walked out to where they had tied their horses. The youngest seemed all of a sudden to be doing a lot of talking. The other nodded a couple of times and glanced back over his shoulder. Cordell wished he could hear what was being said. He had a hunch they were not discussing his health. Cordell knew he wouldn't sleep tonight. The big man spread his blanket outside the wall. The two cowpokes stayed inside. While they settled in for the night, Cordell kept watching them through an opening that had been a doorway. He waited until he heard snoring. He arose, rolled his blanket, and tied it behind his saddle along with his little bit of camp equipment. So the pair would be less likely to hear, he led the mare out 50 yards or so before he saddled her. He circled back around and quietly untied the youth's horses. He led them westward about a mile before turning them loose. Not quite qualifying as horse theft, it was his favorite way of stalling pursuit. By the time the pair found their mounts, he would be miles away. Cordell was still uncertain about their intentions. Odds were that they would have tried to rob him during the night. In that case, he had no cause to regret setting them afoot. On the other hand, there was a chance they were just what they appeared to be, a couple of luckless cowboys. If so, he had done them a wrong. But at least it was only a nuisance that would result in nothing worse than sore feet. Some people he had known, like Milt Hayward, would have shot them just to be safe. Cordell made little effort in the night to hide his tracks, for he couldn't see the terrain well enough to pick his ground. Much of it was sandy. Judging direction by the North Star, he kept riding west to confuse pursuers until he came into a dry wash with a gravel base. That ought to make him hard to track, he thought. He followed the wash in a northwesterly direction for several miles until it played out. He cut back to the northeast to compensate for the wide circle he had made. At daylight, he didn't know where he was except in a general way. Far to the west stretched the rough breaks that led to the base of the High Plains escarpment. Somewhere to the east was notorious Fort Griffin, legendary first as a military post and buffalo hunter's rendezvous, then later as host to cattle drives on their way north to Kansas. He felt its tales of violence had been exaggerated. Such stories almost always were, for most people were more interested in raw meat than in the facts. Still, there must be at least some fire to yield so much smoke. Perhaps in such an environment, his past transgressions might be overlooked. He was unaware of the half dozen riders until they topped a small rise in front of him. To run would be useless, for they had seen him. Dropping his hand to the grip of his pistol, he reined in the mare and waited. They had the grim and purposeful look of a posse. Had they come from behind him, he wouldn't have been surprised, but their appearance head-on gave him a start. He resisted the temptation to draw the weapon. They could perforate him before he got off more than a shot or two. The leader was a gaunt man with a severe expression and a black beard that hid his collar button, or would have if he was wearing a collar.
I do wish you'd take your hand away from that six-shooter.
Not till I know your intentions.
The leader beckoned to a rider whose hat was precariously perched atop a bandaged head.
Does he look like one of them, Hez?
The little man called Hez gave Cordell only a brief inspection.
Nah, this feller is as big as the both of them put together. He don't look like no drover, and he sure as hell ain't no kid anymore.
You're certain?
Well, damn right. They had their faces covered, but I could tell from their voices that they were a couple of young'uns. One of them no-good little bastards laid the barrel of a pistol upside my head, like to have brained me.
The man with the beard turned apologetically to Cordell.
Sorry for the inconvenience, friend. We're looking for a couple of cowboys that robbed a saloon in Fort Griffin after closing time the other night. Probably came off of a cattle drive and knew there'd be a lot of money in the saloon. Got themselves a road stake before they lit out for parts unknown.
Cordell knew of whom he was talking, but saw no reason to say so. An honorable outlaw did not inform on others. It was a courtesy of the trade. He didn't see a badge among this bunch anyway. They looked more like a mob bent on revenge. Citizens of Griffin were known to mete out rough justice without waiting for the law. Waiting required patience.
I ain't seen nobody that fit that description. Fact is, I ain't seen anybody at all.
They had a good head start. They're probably long gone. If you happen to run into a pair of that description, though, you'd better ride way around them. A young rattlesnake's bite is as dangerous as an old one's. as his partner is laid up with a cracked skull. They're liable to kill somebody the next time.
Oh, it's been years since I was in Fort Griffin. What's it like these days?
It's seen better times. With railroads coming across Texas, the trail drives are slowing down. Since the Indians were put away, things are quiet up at the Army post. Worst of all, Albany's the county seat now. Griffin ain't like it used to be. And sometimes, I begin to wonder if it ever was.
Cordell had no interest in the fortunes or misfortunes of Fort Griffin, except as they might apply to the Jackson family. He was doubly relieved when the posse rode on. First of all, they didn't recognize him. Maybe the alarm hadn't reached this far west. Second, his suspicions about his visitors last night proved well-founded. If he hadn't relaxed his guard, he might be lying dead amid the ruins of Phantom Hill. And they might be marveling at their great luck in becoming suddenly rich. Inasmuch as these posse men looked him over without realizing who he was, he felt emboldened to visit Fort Griffin and ask about the Jacksons. He would finish his mission here, then move on. Perhaps that new life he hoped for was finally within his reach. Choctaw John chewed vigorously on a wad of tobacco as he squatted on his heels and studied the ground.
Ain't there been a storybook about a flying horse?
Can't say. I never read many storybooks.
I'm afraid that's what we've got here. For all the trace I can find, that horse just up and flew away.
John's tracking led them to an abandoned military post, its walls crumbled, the brush growing up on what had been a parade ground.
It's Phantom Hill.
Fresh ashes and charred wood showed that someone built a campfire. Boot tracks were still visible where remnants of old walls protected them from wind.
Looks like your man met up with two others here. Hard to figure what happened. All three horses started off together. Looks like somebody was following after them afoot. Damn peculiar.
A mile or so from the post, two horses split off and headed north. The third, its tracks the same ones Andy and John had followed all along, continued westward for a short time, then suddenly vanished. John and Andy spent several hours circling and searching, but found no more sign. Andy heard stories among the Comanches about medicine men supposedly able to transform themselves into birds and fly to distant places. He never believed those tales. Anyway, Cordell was no medicine man, but years of experience in escaping from the law appeared to have made him part coyote.
Maybe your Cordell is using an old Choctaw trick, wrapping his horse's feet with leather so the hooves don't cut deep.
Andy couldn't leave unanswered the implication that Choctaws were smarter.
Comanches did it too.
He thought it more likely that Cordell simply had a strong instinct for finding ground where he wouldn't leave a trail. Andy had developed a grudging respect for the fugitive's perverse ability to evade pursuit.
If you ever capture this one, they ought to promote you. He's about as slippery as I've ever seen, not to have some Choctaw blood in him.
That wouldn't surprise me. I don't know a lot about him, except he's slicker than a greased pig.
John rose to a stand and leaned against his horse.
I'm afraid we've lost him for good. He'll eventually come to ground in one place or another, and some sheriff will grab him.
I've been on his trail too long to quit. I couldn't go back and look at Tom Blessing's grave, knowing I'd failed him. I wish he'd stay with me a while longer.
I hate to take money under false pretenses, except when it belongs to Thaddeus Hunnicutt. Now I get a kick out of aggravating that old skinflint.
What if I offered you $3 a day instead of two?
Oh, Ranger, you're speaking the Choctaw language. But you know there ain't a Chinaman's chance I'll pick up that trail again.
At least it's a chance, no matter how small.
I like a man who makes up his mind to do a job and sticks with it, even when it goes to hell. Must be the Comanche in you. They're the stubbornest damn people I ever knew.
You might be right.
As I remember it, though, every time us Choctaws had a fight with the Comanches, we won.
Like hell you did.
He knew that by tradition, a ranger was always supposed to be sure of himself, but he was undecided about what to do next. All he could think of was to keep going in a westerly direction and hope. Maybe they'd get lucky and cut into Cordell's trail. Andy had a general sense of where he and John were. He had passed through this region during his time with the nomadic Comanches and later in his grown-up years. This was a transition area where the cross timbers yielded to the rolling plains. Somewhere back to the northeast would be Fort Griffin. The town and the army post for which it was named lay along the south side of the Brazos River tributary known as the Clear Fork. It had been a favorite hunting ground for the Comanches before they were driven north of the Red River. Cattlemen brought in their herds after hide hunters killed off the buffalo. Now farmers were taking up the more arable portions, turning the native sod under. Rumors circulated of plans for a railroad. Cordell had avoided towns for the most part, so Andy thought it unlikely he'd go to Griffin and risk being recognized. More likely, he would continue west, up over the Caprock and out onto the open plains. On the vast Llano Estacado, Indian raiders often simply disappeared, confounding those who pursued them. Andy decided to keep moving that way and hope. He saw half a dozen riders ahead, coming from the direction of the distant Caprock. They slouched in their saddles as if they'd almost reached the end of their endurance.
Let's wait and see who they are. Maybe they've seen somebody.
The apparent leader was a man with a black beard, not unlike the one Andy remembered seeing on Cordell, though this beard was better trimmed. The man gave Andy and John a quick but critical study.
Mind telling me who you all are?
I'm Andy Pickard, Texas Ranger. John's my tracker.
A ranger? We sure could have used you yesterday. I reckon now it's too late. They've given us the slip.
They?
Two men, probably drovers. Robbed a saloon in Fort Griffin, pistol-whipped the owner and the bartender, come nigh killing him.
Was one of them a big feller, 40 or so?
No, these were young, not much more than kids, the way the bartender told it.
Andy's hopes sagged.
You're looking for a big man?
A man named Cordell. I've been on his trail all the way from southeast Texas.
The leader stroked his beard.
We may have seen him. We come upon a big feller yesterday and asked if he'd crossed trails with the two we're after. He said he hadn't.
Was he riding a bay mare?
Sure was. What's he done?
It'd take an hour to tell you what all. Which way was he traveling?
West. If you was to chance upon those two young scoundrels, we'd appreciate you putting them under arrest and bringing them to Fort Griffin. We'd see that they never rob anybody again.
I couldn't stand still for a hanging if that's what you got in mind.
You ain't likely to see them anyhow. They're probably halfway across the plains by now. To Mobiti or Tuscosa.
I don't think so. John here reckoned two riders turned north. I'll bet they're the ones you're looking for.
The leader looked puzzled.
We missed that. But why would they turn north after coming so far west?
Maybe they figured to circle around and throw you off.
They could be back in Fort Griffin right now, robbing somebody else. They had their faces covered. Nobody'd know them. We'd better use our spurs and get back. Coming with us, Ranger?
No, we've got our own job to do.
Andy strongly suspected the posse had unknowingly come upon Cordell. Living up to the outlaw fraternity's code of ethics, he lied when he told them he'd not seen the young riders. The Fort Griffin riders pushed their horses into a reluctant trot, leaving Andy and John to continue in their westward direction. Late in the afternoon, Andy noticed that John kept looking back. Andy saw nothing behind them. Finally, John looked at Andy.
I thought you Comanches had a guardian spirit to tell you about things you can't see.
It doesn't always work. Choctaws are supposed to have one, too.
I don't need any spirit to talk to me. My eyesight's good enough. I'll bet you hadn't noticed there's somebody following us.
Andy's first thought was of Cordell, but that made no sense.
There is. How do you know he's following us? He might have a good reason to be traveling in the same direction we are.
We can find out. Let's jog to the north and see if he keeps on coming.
John's uneasiness was contagious. Andy had still not seen anyone, but he knew John's eyesight was sharp. Perhaps he had a sixth sense as well.
We'll try it. I hope you're wrong.
They made a sharp change in direction and rode on for a mile or so.
Like I figured, he's trailing us.
Andy had hoped it wouldn't happen.
There's brush up ahead. We can pull up there and lay for him.
What do we do with him when we get him?
Unless he's Cordell, I've got no idea.
Showing caution, the rider slowed as he approached the brushy draw where Andy and John had concealed themselves. He stopped to study the way ahead. By this time, Andy could see that the man was large, somewhat as he remembered Cordell. But Cordell should be somewhere ahead of them. It made no sense for him to have fallen behind. The rider overcame his doubts and came on. Pistols drawn, Andy and John rode out to confront him.
Keep those hands up where we can see them.
Startled, the man instinctively reached for his pistol, but he saw he was covered. He raised his hands to shoulder height.
What the hell?
That's what we want to know. How come you're trailing us?
The rider shook his head.
I ain't trailing you. I don't even know who you are. If you figure to rob me, you won't get much.
We're not robbers. I'm a ranger. Now, who are you?
The man looked around as if gauging his chance of breaking away.
Name's Smith. John Smith.
My horse could come up with a better name than that.
He saw the man had a sizable blanket roll tied behind his saddle, as if he were traveling far. He probably had camp supplies bundled in it. His saddlebags bulged.
You're pretty well fixed for traveling.
The man's eyes had a hard and defiant look.
It's a long ways between towns.
I wouldn't be surprised to find you in my fugitive book. Keep him covered, John.
Andy holstered his pistol and reached into his saddlebag, where he kept Len's list of wanted men. He cut his gaze away from the stranger for a moment. The stranger sank spurs into his horse and rammed into John, throwing him off balance. John grabbed for the saddle horn, dropping his pistol. In an instant, the rider had his own pistol out. He snapped off a shot at John. The rider swung the muzzle around. For a couple of seconds, he aimed point blank at Andy. For some reason, he didn't squeeze the trigger. Startled by the shot, Andy's horse danced in confusion. Andy drew his pistol, but was unable to steady it enough for a clean shot. The shooter wheeled his horse around and quickly vanished from sight in the thick brush. Andy was about to spur after him when he saw that John was still on the ground. Fearfully, he swung out of the saddle and dropped to one knee.
Are you hit?
John pressed his hand against his side, then raised it for Andy to see the blood.
Damn right I'm hit. Feels like I got a broke rib. Maybe a bunch of them.
The two horses ran off a short way, then stopped to look back. The little pack mule followed them. Andy hoped that was as far as they would go, but he couldn't take time to catch them now. He had to see about John. Kneeling at the tracker's side, he pulled John's shirt open. The wound was bleeding.
Looks like that bullet glanced off your ribs and went on. Probably broke one or two.
Hell of a way to earn $3.
Think you can ride?
John pressed his hand against his ribs and tried, with Andy's help, to get to his feet. He couldn't, and settled back down to a sitting position.
I don't think so.
It occurred to Andy that if one or two ribs were broken, which appeared likely, a sharp edge could puncture John's lung.
I can't just leave you out here and ride for help. No telling how far it'd be or how long it'd take.
There ain't no way in hell that I can ride a horse.
Maybe I can rig a travois like the Indians used.
Sounds like a Comanche torture trick. But I don't want to stay here.
Andy rolled John's shirt and used it to bind the ribs as best he could.
Who do you reckon that was?
Somebody who was afraid I'd find him listed in the book, I guess. It was just a chance that we ran into each other.
But he was following us.
That I can't explain.
There was something else Andy couldn't explain.
He drew a perfect bead on me, but didn't shoot.
I wish he hadn't shot at me either.
He could have killed me, but he didn't.
Count your blessings. Anyway, I'm afraid I've cost you any chance to catch up with Cordell.
It appears we'd lost him anyway.
Andy slowly approached the horses. He caught his own, then John's. It took a while to find two branches long enough and strong enough to carry John's weight. He ran them through his stirrups and tied them, then secured shorter pieces as cross braces behind the horse. He placed his and John's blankets on as padding.
It's a long ways from a feather bed.
Slowly and cautiously, he eased John onto this awkward conveyance.
Don't you bounce me off of this thing.
Andy tied John's horse to the pack mule, knowing the mule would follow like a dog.
Are you ready?
No, but let's go anyway.
Andy sensed that his horse was uneasy. Allowing it time to accept this odd attachment it was expected to drag, he started in a slow walk. The horse kept looking back at first. Andy feared it might kick at the travois, but the animal calmed, and Andy felt secure enough to pick up the pace. It was going to be a rough ride for John. Andy could only guess how far it was to Fort Griffin. Cordell was skittish about riding into Fort Griffin in broad daylight. He staked the mare to graze near the narrow river and took his ease beneath the shade of heavy trees while he waited for darkness. Three people rode by, but gave him no more than a glance. He took that for a favorable sign. Maybe this town was not given to asking a lot of questions. At dark, he rode down the dirt street, looking first of all for a place to eat, one not crowded with customers. He found a small joint that seemed to have no business at all. The cook was the only person in the place, and he was skinny as a snake. That should be a warning about the food, Cordell decided, once he bit into the steak. It must have come from a tough old bull, and the biscuits were hard enough to hurt his teeth. But it was the first time in a while that he ate his fill. Carrying his saddlebags, he walked down a couple of doors to a saloon that offered the same lack of customers and decided to give it a little of his business. Two men stood near the bar. More accurately, they leaned on it and gave every appearance of having been there too long. Cordell walked to a dark corner, well away from the kerosene lamp that sat on the bar. He intended to have a quiet drink or two, and when nobody else was close enough to hear and remember, to ask the bartender about the Jackson family. The barkeep brought Cordell a drink.
Kind of quiet here tonight.
Yeah, been a couple of days since the trail herd hit town. There's several just south of here, though. Get busier in a night or two.
Bits and pieces of the two drunks' conversation came to Cordell, but he couldn't hear enough to piece together any meaning. Not that it mattered. The voices were drowned out by boisterous laughter from the street. Three young men pushed through the door, two jamming shoulders together as they tried to enter at the same time. A third trailed a couple of steps behind, dragging his feet. He looked to be the youngest, perhaps 17 or 18. As the three approached the lamp and its full light shone on their faces, Cordell was startled. The two in the lead were the ones he encountered at Phantom Hill. He remembered that their tracks veered north a mile or so from the abandoned post. The posse was wrong in assuming they went on west. They circled and took a roundabout way back to Griffin. The third youth remained in a dim area well away from the lamplight. Cordell couldn't see his face clearly. The oldest of the youths began to harass the two drunks.
How long's it been since you old farts took a bath? You stink!
The older man tried to ignore him. The one who had spoken grabbed the nearest drunk by the shoulder and turned him half around.
It'd be a service to the town if we was to drag you down to the river and throw you in. A soaking would do you both a world of good.
Ha! You're right!
The pair grabbed the two men by their arms and pulled them toward the door. The bartender's face darkened. He slammed both hands down on the bar to get their attention. It sounded almost like a pistol shot.
Boys, I won't have you manhandling my customers. If you want a drink and you have the money to pay for it, put it here where I can see it. Otherwise, get back outside and get you some fresh air.
Well, now, Oscar, you better be careful what you say. You might just get a bath yourself.
He made a move as if to grab the bartender by the collar. Oscar stepped back out of reach, bent down, and came up with a double-barreled shotgun.
Like I said, the air's fresher outside.
The challenger stared at the weapon, but didn't back away. Cordell had not intended to meddle, but he thought he saw serious intention in the bartender's face. If someone didn't yield, there was about to be a mess of blood on the floor and all kinds of people rushing in here to see what happened. A crowd like that was the last thing he wanted.
Son, maybe you never seen what a shotgun blast can do to a man.
The youth's attention shifted. The one who had challenged the bartender took a step toward Cordell's table.
Ain't I seen you somewhere?
The two drunks took advantage of the distraction to stumble out through the door. Cordell laid his pistol on the table, where it immediately gained the youth's full attention.
Not as I recall.
Sully! Ain't he the one?
Shut up, Finn.
I believe it's gonna be better all around if you take your business down the street. The whiskey here ain't that damn good anyway.
The youngest of the three straightened up.
I never did like this joint. Let's get.
All right. I don't care to spend my money where it ain't appreciated.
He turned to the bartender.
We heard what happened to old Shep at his bar the other night. You know, him and Hez. You might want to be careful how you talk to people, Oscar. It could happen to you.
He turned, and the other two followed him out. The bartender waited to be sure they were gone and then placed the shotgun back beneath the bar. Bringing a bottle and a glass, he sat down at the table, refilled Cordell's drink, and downed one himself.
You said my whiskey ain't very good. What's wrong with it?
Oh, nothing. I had to say something. He was about to get serious.
Yeah, we got some wild kids around here.
Maybe they were just funning, huh?
Their kind of fun ain't funny. Sooner or later, it'd get somebody hurt.
Who are they?
The oldest two are the Keeler brothers. Got no mother, and their old daddy's too busy staying drunk to pay much mind. They're like two young studs that nobody managed to put a saddle on.
The Keelers were the ones Cordell had left afoot.
And the other one?
Name's Dobie Jackson. Got no daddy, just a widowed mother. She's working herself into the grave to keep the farm going. Boy needs a court taken to him. If he keeps running with them Keeler brothers, he'll end up dead or killing somebody.
Jackson. Cordell had found out most of what he wanted without having to ask for it. He hoped it was the right family.
Ain't she got any other sons to help her?
She used to have. She's afraid Dobie's liable to up and leave her like her other boy did. If he keeps letting them Keelers lead him around, he may have to.
But what about that other son?
Name's David. He hung around with the Keelers too much, too. Got in a little trouble and took to the brush. Aurelia has no idea where he's at.
Cordell felt a wrenching in his gut. Probably the whiskey, he tried to tell himself. But he knew the cause.
It's a damn shame to see a boy throw his life away. Like as not, David's in jail someplace. The way he's going, Dobie's apt to follow right after him.
The bartender leaned forward, lowering his voice.
I got a strong suspicion it wasn't no drovers that robbed old Shep's bar. Wouldn't surprise me none if it was them Keeler boys.
Well, they can't be very smart if they think they can pull a stunt like that in their own town and not be recognized.
No, they covered their faces with sacks. But they ain't half as smart as they think they are. If they's to try that trick on me, I'd know them. They wouldn't get 6 feet inside the door.
Cordell swallowed another drink, emptying the bottle. He tried in vain to drive away the image of Buster lying dead in a doctor's office, taken down by a lawman's bullet.
All of a sudden, you don't look so good.
Yeah, something I ate.
Must have been that joint down the street. I ain't surprised. I wouldn't let my dog eat what comes out of that kitchen.
I think I'd better go out and get me some air.
Cordell thought of a way around having to ask the question directly.
I wouldn't want to run into those boys and have no trouble with them. Which way would they be going home?
East, down the river. The Jackson farm is 3 or 4 miles. The Keeler place a ways further. But they won't be leaving town till they run out of money or they're falling down drunk.
Oscar picked up Cordell's empty bottle from the table.
I wish we had chain gangs here like we had back in Alabama. It'd do them boys a heap of good to work on the roads a while. Maybe it'd sweat some of the meanness out of them. You ever see a chain gang?
Old emotions enveloped Cordell like a malevolent dark cloud.
Yeah, once.
Cordell felt unsteady, making his way out the door. He leaned on the outside wall until he had his feet under him. He knew he had drunk too much. That was dangerous for a man on the dodge. He would be an easy catch should a lawman show up, or a thief coveting what he carried in his saddlebags. He found a wooden bench in front of a darkened store and slumped there, hoping the effects of the whiskey would soon pass. He dozed off, wakened when the saddlebag slipped from his lap, then dozed again.
Oh, my darling.
His sleep was again interrupted by loud talking and a voice raised in what was meant to be a song. Down the street, he saw three shadowy figures stumbling around a hitching rail. Trying to mount his horse, one let his foot slip from the stirrup. He fell on his back while the other two laughed. Though he couldn't see them clearly, their voices told him that they were the Keeler brothers and Dobie Jackson. A thought penetrated the fog that had enveloped his brain. He wanted to know where the Jackson family lived without having to ask directly. All he had to do was follow these three. He hoped they were on their way home and not simply looking for another place to carouse. The mare snorted as he untied her. She probably didn't like the awkward way he approached her, or perhaps it was the smell of the whiskey.
Now you ride, old girl. I don't like myself very much riding down near them.
Oh. He managed to get into the saddle on the first try. He had the presence of mind to be sure he had tied the saddlebags down securely. As the three riders pulled away from town, he put the mare into a walk. They sometimes moved out of sight despite the full moon, but he could follow the sound of their voices. They occasionally stopped, passing a bottle around. As he gradually sobered, he felt some concern that they might not make it home. Eventually, Cordell saw light ahead. A lantern hung from the roof of a farmhouse porch. It was a mother's way of helping her boy find his way home, he supposed. He reined up to prevent overtaking the three. They stopped a few minutes before two rode on. One made his way to a barn and started to dismount, and then fell like a sack of grain. He lay on the ground a minute or two before he pushed shakily to his feet and removed the saddle, blanket, and bridle. Slapping his horse on the rump, he dragged his tack into the barn. He didn't come out. Cordell suspected he had collapsed on the floor. He would probably spend the night there without going to the house.
Damn fool, Kim.
Now he knew where the Jackson family lived. He would retreat a little way and finish the night sleeping on the ground. Ever since Buster died, he had tried to decide how to go about what had to be done. Now that he was here, all the options he considered seemed to have evaporated. Maybe the morning sun would clear his head. Then he could make up his mind what to do next.
That's bad enough when some chuckle-headed kid drink too much. Man my age ought to know better.
He had slept fitfully, neither his stomach nor his head taking kindly to the abuse he had given them. After sun up, he boiled coffee. It helped clear his head, but did nothing for his stomach. His whiskers had been allowed to grow for several days. He feared his appearance might frighten Buster's mother, so he took time to boil river water and shave. He knew he was still a long way from handsome, but he did the best he could. If he betrayed his true identity immediately, he might not be allowed to enter the house. Buster's mother would have every right to blame him for losing her son, though the bartender said the boy was already under a cloud when he left here. Cordell decided to play his cards close to the vest until the time felt right for showing his hand. Riding toward the unpainted frame farmhouse, he could see that it was badly in need of work. A side window was broken out, a piece of cardboard up in its place. Some roof shingles were broken, probably by a hailstorm. Out back at the barn, a door hung by a single hinge. These were all things her son Dobie could repair if he were more inclined to work. Buster's rightful share of the bank money would come to just over $3,000. Cordell could see that the farm badly needed patching up, starting with the unpainted frame house. That kind of money could do this place a world of good. He wondered about Mrs. Jackson's reaction. Would she eagerly grab the cash, as Irmadell almost certainly would, or coldly reject both it and him? He halfway hoped she would turn it down. He admired honesty and courage wherever he saw them. In that case, he would hide the money so she would find it later after he was gone. A debt of honor had to be paid, whatever the cost. A picket fence surrounded the house, though like everything else around here, it needed work. He tied his horse and walked up to the front door. It was open, but it would be rude to enter without invitation, especially with the knowledge that a woman was inside. He knocked on the door frame. He could hear the wooden floor creak as someone walked across it. A woman appeared at the door, wiping her hands on her apron.
Yes?
Taking off his hat, Luther had to look at her a moment before he could say anything. She was in her 40s, but by his estimation was still a handsome woman, despite worry tracks around her tired eyes and gray beginning to streak the hair tied in a bun at the back of her head.
Ma'am, my name is, Walter Goodson, I'm looking for work. I see your place could stand some fixing up.
She gave him as intense a looking over as he had given her.
Well, that it does, but I can't afford to hire anybody.
Now, that don't need to stand in a way. I've been hungry a while. I'd work for meals and a place to sleep out of the rain.
He could see her struggling over the proposition.
I wouldn't want to take advantage of you, asking you to work for nothing.
That wouldn't be for nothing, ma'am.
I'm taking it on faith that you're a good cook.
Fair to middling. But you won't see any fat people around here.
I'd regard it as a real favor if you let me stay at least a little while. I promise you I'd earn my keep.
She was weakening.
I never like to turn anybody away from the door hungry. And it's a fact we could use some help.
She smiled. It was just a half smile, but it was a pleasant one.
All right. For a little while. And if there's any way I can do it, I'll pay you. I warn you, it may not be much.
No, I don't need for much.
You'll find hay in the shed for your mare. You can turn her loose in the corral. And there's an old cot in the barn where you can lay out your bedding. It'll still be a while before dinner.
Well, I'll find something useful to do till then.
He put his hat back on.
I thank you, ma'am.
By the way, my name's Aurelia Jackson.
I'm mighty pleased to know you, ma'am.
He noticed a large wood pile in back of the house, but only a small stack had been chopped into the right length for a cook stove. He turned the bay mare into the corral and put out some hay for her. He found a folding steel cot and dropped his blanket roll on it. He hid his saddlebags beneath the pile of hay, then returned to the wood pile and began swinging the axe. His hands were tender, not used to hard manual labor. They soon became sore. He could feel a blister rising, but he was determined to get himself into the widow's good graces. Then, at the proper time, he would tell her why he was here. He became so absorbed in the work that he didn't hear someone walk up behind him until he saw a shadow. Luther whirled, dropping his hand to his hip. Dobie Jackson stood there, looking considerably less cheerful than in the saloon last night. His eyes were bloodshot. He sweated profusely, though the day had not turned more than moderately warm.
Who the hell are you? What are you doing here?
My name Walter Goodson. I'm hired on to work. Who the hell are you?
I'm Dobie.
The youth frowned darkly, squinting one eye.
Ain't I seen you someplace?
Maybe. I've been lots of places.
You wasn't in Oscar's place last night, was you?
Oh, yeah. I believe I was. I believe I saw you there, too.
You busted up a little innocent fun. Me and the Keeler boys wasn't really gonna throw anybody in the river. We were just hoorahing a couple of drunks.
Well, it looked to me like you were a little drunk your own self.
You won't tell Ma about that, will you?
I won't tell her about it if you won't tell her about me.
Fair deal.
Dobie started toward the house, then turned back.
What did you say you're doing here?
Just hired on to do some fixing up. The place needs it. Been needing it for some time, it looked like.
Yeah. I've been meaning to get around to it.
Luther leaned on the axe.
Who are those Keeler boys?
They're neighbors. We used to go to school together till we all decided to quit. Got tired of teachers trying to tell us what to do.
Oh, do those Keelers tell you what to do?
Nobody tells me what to do. I do my own thinking.
And a damn poor job you doing of it. Well, you're none of my worry. But I feel sorry for your mama.
Luther chopped what he thought would be enough wood for at least 4 or 5 days, then drove the blade of the axe into a log he'd used for a chopping block. He brought an armload of firewood into the kitchen to replenish the wood box beside the hot cast-iron range. He could smell bread baking in the oven. Aurelia Jackson poked a couple of sticks of wood into the stove.
You just as well quit and wash up. Dinner will be ready pretty soon. I expect you're hungry.
Yes, ma'am, I sure am.
I wish you'd call my son. He's working at the barn, I think.
Cordell saw no reason to tell her that Dobie was slumped on a bench in the shade at the side of the house.
I'll fetch him.
Dobie looked up at Luther from his seat.
I don't know as I can eat anything. My stomach is all tore up.
Yeah, but whiskey gonna do that to you every time. What you need is good hard work to sweat it out your blood. I saw a stack of shingles out yonder. After dinner, we climb up and patch your mother's roof.
Don't rain here all that much.
And we gon' fix it just the same.
Cordell's own hangover made him short of patience.
Now get off your butt and wash for dinner.
Who do you think you are ordering me around?
I'm a man who can kick you from here to Fort Griffin. Now go wash up for dinner.
Resentfully, Dobie left the bench and walked to a small back porch where a bucket of water and a basin sat on a waist-high shelf. He glared at Cordell as he washed his hands and splashed his face with water.
It wouldn't hurt you none. You comb your hair, too. You look like a woolly booger.
You ain't no rose yourself.
Cordell washed up and went into the kitchen. He was greeted by the smell of fresh bread and roast pork. He had already noted a pen of hogs out back of the barn.
It's a rare thing when we have beef around here, but hog meat is plentiful enough.
Cordell had eaten his fill of ham out of the Fergus smokehouse. Roast, however, was a different matter.
Whew, it looked mighty good.
He was pleased to see Dobie walk into the kitchen with his hair combed. The youth flashed him a quick frown, then glanced away.
Now, me and your son are going to work on your roof after dinner. Look like it might have a few leaks in it.
That it does. I'd be much obliged if you'd show Dobie how it's done. Since his daddy died, there hasn't been anybody here to teach him things like that.
Well, now, we're going to get along just fine, him and me.
He gave Dobie a hard glance that told him there would be no argument. He started to reach for the biscuits, but saw Mrs. Jackson bow her head and begin giving thanks. That caught him off guard. It had been a long time since he'd given the blessing, or even heard someone else do it. Flustered, he looked down at the table.
Amen.
Amen.
Dobie doesn't know how fortunate he is to have someone show him how to do things. I wish there had been somebody here for David.
David?
My older son. He went kind of wild after he lost his father. Then one day, just up and rode away. We had a couple of short letters from him, but that was all. I wish I knew where he is.
Cordell couldn't look at her.
I keep hoping he'll come riding in here someday, all grown up, ready to settle down and start a family. That dream is about all that keeps me going.
Cordell lost his taste for biscuits and roast pork. Andy wondered how Choctaw John kept from crying out as the crude travois bumped along the broken ground. He tried to avoid the rougher places, but the uneven terrain was a constant challenge. He stopped from time to time, dismounted, and went back to make sure John was still breathing. A punctured lung, should that come to pass, might well kill him.
Maybe we better stop a while and let you rest.
John's face had paled. His eyes were pinched in pain, or perhaps from the burning of sweat that ran down his forehead.
The sooner we get to where we're going, the better I can get off of this devilish drag.
Andy could only guess the distance to Fort Griffin. At this slow rate, it was a cinch they wouldn't reach there before sometime tomorrow, if then.
Are you sure they got a doctor in that town?
I'm not sure of anything, except that it's a long way.
They've probably got an undertaker. That may be what I need by the time we get there.
Don't talk about dying. You haven't earned your money yet.
I've got no interest in dying. I wouldn't give Thaddeus that satisfaction.
At least John had not lost his sardonic sense of humor, and he took comfort in that. Toward sundown, he decided John had had about all that he should have to stand for one day. They had enough canteen water that they could camp without traveling farther to find a creek.
The day ain't finished yet.
No, but you are, just about.